Buck Benny, the two-fisted, quick-triggered marksman who shoots from the hip and never misses.
Well, hello again. Welcome to another fantastic episode of the Jack Benny Show from the 1940-41 season, 70 years ago this week. Today, kind of a different podcast. This one is based solely on a photograph that I found. And I'll tell you how I've been finding a bunch of interesting pictures. It's hard. There's only so many pictures on the internet of, you know, some of these folks that are on Jack Benny's shows. And I try and bring up new pictures every once in a while to show you folks. And it's getting harder and harder to do that. What I've found, though, is the folks over at Google have created a magazine collection as part of their Google Books that is pretty amazing in some ways. For instance, I believe it has like all the Billboard magazines and all of the Life magazines that exist, or at least a huge amount of them, all saved in digital form that you can search through and go take a look at. And so I've been doing searches for Jack Benny and Fred Allen and that sort of thing, and I'll go back and find a 1942 article or something. Anyway, I found a advertisement for 1937 Jack Benny, the season, you know, that was coming up anyway, 1937. And there were some interesting pictures there, and one of them was of, I recognized it was Ed Beloine and Bill Morrow, the two writers for the Jack Benny Show that are writing it in the 1940-41 season. But there was a third person there, and I was going, who is that third person? And I was thinking, could that be Al Boasberg? And then I went over to the International Jack Benny Fan Club and posted on their forum to see if someone could pick it out. And of course, Laura Leff, the president of the International Jack Benny Fan Club, put a posting that it was Al Boasberg. And so I was like, wow, I've never seen an actual picture of Al Boasberg before. So I'm posting that picture, even though Al Boasberg by this time had been dead for a number of years. He was with Benny. I'm trying to figure it out. It sounds like he might have been with Benny kind of in the background from even before he came into radio. He was one of the first like script doctors who would come in and punch up a script and add some jokes and that sort of thing and make it take it over the top. And he got paid a lot of money to do that, thousands of dollars to... He was getting paid more than Beloine and Morrow, who wrote the scripts. He was getting paid more to just spice them up a little bit. His most prolific season or whatever on the Jack Benny Show was the 1936-37 season. And he died right after that. His last show that he did for the Jack Benny Show, the last one he punched up, was introducing Rochester to the Jack Benny Show. So, and I think that's why when you go back, it's interesting. I think I wouldn't be surprised if that's why I've always had a question, if you've listened to my old podcast, about why Rochester like appears in a 1937 episode, the 36-37 season. He's right there at the end as Rochester, totally having the Rochester characteristics and truly being in name, action, deed, the whole thing, Rochester. And then that doesn't happen again for like 6 months that he's back as Rochester and doing his thing. And so I'm thinking now maybe it's because Al Boasberg kind of wrote that part of the script, and Beloine and Morrow just kind of didn't know what to do with it after that, so they just let it lay there for a while, and then they decided that they would go back and revisit that, and of course, we have Rochester for the rest of the run of the series. Anyway, Boasberg also, he's shaped. Really, he's considered to be the person who came up with the idea of stand-up comedy, and he shaped Bob Hope's career, and he was responsible for kind of Bob Hope's image and his style. Same thing with Jack Benny. Same thing with George Burns, and that's pretty impressive. And another a number of other people as well, that he kind of came up with their whole act and the whole spiel of how they were going to perform and everything. He also wrote, I want to say, 27 or 37 different movies in the early years, which is pretty amazing. Let me see if I can find out what years. I had it written down here somewhere. 47 films between 1926 and 1937. That's pretty amazing. Including A Night at the Opera, which was the Marx Brothers, of course, big hit. He worked with Buster Keaton. I mean, he worked with just an amazing, amazing writing career. In 2009, so last year, the Al Boesberg Comedy Award was established. So he's just starting to even get more recognition than he had before. He's just kind of the catalyst for so many things. So anyway, so here's a picture of Al Boesberg with Ed Beloine, Jack Benny, and Bill Morrow. And if you go to the website, you'll see it. Of course, I don't know how, you know, some of you see it at the website, some of you never see my pictures I put up, but that's the way it goes. Anyway, enjoy this episode of Jack Benny, written by Ed Beloine and Bill Morrow.
J-E-L-L-O.
The Jell-O program, starring Jack Benny, with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. The orchestra opens the program with Ferryboat Serenade. During recent months in county fairs all over the United States, lots of housewives have been winning prizes for the best homemade pies and cakes. And meanwhile, right in their own homes, thousands of housewives have been winning another prize, the blue ribbon of family approval, simply by serving those three new dessert favorites, Jell-O puddings. Jell-O puddings are ready-prepared puddings that take hardly any time or effort to make. Merely add milk, cook a few minutes, and then cool. And there's a pudding, ladies and gentlemen, that tastes positively homemade. A rich, luscious pudding with a world of grand pleasure in each creamy spoonful. Jell-O puddings come in three delicious flavors, chocolate, vanilla, and butterscotch. And they're made by the same folks who make world-famous Jell-O. So after this, whenever you buy Jell-O, ask the grocer for several packages of Jell-O puddings, too. When it comes to smooth, creamy flavor and all-around dessert enjoyment, you just can't beat those popular new members of the Jell-O family, Jell-O puddings. Ferryboat Serenade, played by the orchestra. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I bring you a man who returned to the air last Sunday, happy as a June bride and just as nervous, Jack Benny.
Thank you, thank you. Hello again, this is Jack Benny talking. And Don, I appreciate the fact that you tried to start the program with a laugh and almost succeeded. But I wasn't the least bit nervous last Sunday, not the slightest.
Why, Jack, what are you talking about? You were shaking like a leaf.
Now, listen, Don, you should be the last one in the world to talk about me being shaky. Why, all during the program, your chins were doing the La Conga. And the one in the middle was out of step. So there.
Just the same, I wasn't as jittery as you were.
Don, let me explain the difference between being jittery and high-strung. For instance, you take a good bird dog when he's all keyed up and ready to go. He's not nervous, but he stands there, his whole body quivering, ready to spring into action. And that's the way I was, Don. Just like a bird dog.
I see.
Oh, hello, Mary.
Hello, Rover. Take that quail out of your mouth.
Mary, I was only making a comparison, that's all. I was explaining to Don that I wasn't nervous last week. I was just high-strung like anybody who wants to give a good performance.
He's right, Don. Did you ever see a football player before a big game? Or a fighter before he goes into the ring?
Why, of course.
Did you ever see Helen Hayes before she steps out on the stage?
Certainly.
Did you ever see Jack in a bathing suit?
What's that got to do? Now, we were talking about nervousness. You ring in my bathing suit. Where's the connection?
It needs a new belt.
All right, so it needs a new belt. Now, Mary, if you can quit punching them out for a minute. Let's be thankful that the first show went over so well. You know, Don, I read some swell reviews on the fantasy I wrote. You know, where the blue fairy woke us all up. Ed Sullivan raved about it.
He did?
Yes, and that's a critic's opinion. He said that, well, I got the review right here with me. Would you like to hear it?
Yeah, stop drooling.
Well, it's nothing to be ashamed of. Listen to this. The Jell-O program opened its, Wilson. Harris. Livingston. While Jack Benny... While Jack Benny...
The Waukegan Weasel.
The Waukegan Weasel. Mary. While Jack Benny not only appeared in the show, but wrote and produced the fantasy of the Blue Fairy, which, in the opinion of this reviewer, was unquestionably puerile and banal.
It was what?
Puerile and banal. I'm not making it up, Don. It's right here in black and white.
But, Jack, puerile means childish, infantile.
Well, of course. I wrote it for the kiddies.
And banal mean what's happened to the kitty shouldn't happen to a dog.
Oh, no, it doesn't.
Yes, Jack, banal means hackneyed or trite. You know, old-fashioned stuff.
Oh. Gee, I can't understand it. Those words look so good. Oh, well, our listeners liked it. That's all I care about.
They certainly did, Jack. In fact, I brought a clipping along I thought you might not have seen, and it's very complimentary.
It is?
I'll read it to you later.
Read it now when I need it. Go ahead.
Okay, here it is. Our Sunday evenings at home will be much more pleasant now that Jack Benny is back on the air.
Well, what paper is that in, Don?
The Alcatraz Herald.
Well, Don, that seems to be the consensus of opinion. Mary, did you see any reviews on our first broadcast?
No, but I went to Fifi's beauty parlor yesterday, and the girls there just raved about it.
At Fifi's, huh?
They thought everything I said was so cute.
Well, sure, you're a good customer at that beauty parlor. They talk about anyone else on the program?
Just Phil. He goes there, too.
I know. And what burns me up, he goes around telling everybody that his hair is naturally curly. It's really as straight as the string. I've seen him in the morning, you know. Oh, here he is now. Hello, handsome.
Well, here I am, folks. Lay down them cards and turn up the dials.
Boy, what a Smithfield. Phil, what makes you think that this program never gets started until you come on? We've been doing all right.
Yeah, but you guys don't get them belly laughs, them socceroos, them bafolas.
Oh, you and your bafolas. By the way, Phil, did you hear anything about our first broadcast?
Well, at Fifi's, they said that
we heard about that. Did you see any reviews in the paper?
Yeah, I saw one write up in the Butcher's Gazette.
The Butcher's Gazette, eh? Did they like the show?
Yeah, they said it was very cleaver. How's that, folks? Harris clicks again. I'm rolling now.
Phil, what was that supposed to be, a bapola or a socceroo?
Well, wait till they stop laughing. I can't tell yet.
Oh, that's right. Now, Phil, you might have a few more Butcher Gazette gags up your sleeve, but I think it's about time for a number. How about playing something?
Okay, Jackson.
Say, Jack, what about that idea of yours?
What idea? Oh, yes. Phil, I've got a great suggestion for something new this season.
What is it?
Well, inasmuch as we try to inject something different into our show, I thought it'd be a novelty if I played violin with your band once in a while. What do you say?
Over my beautiful dead body.
Now, wait a minute. This program needs new talent, and I can take the place of one of your violinists. That little guy there on the end.
But, Jackson, I got a perfect arrangement of this next number, and one bad note is liable to spoil the whole thing.
Phil, a bad note in one of your arrangement is like throwing a rose into a barrel of Roquefort. So make way in that fiddle section. I'm going to town.
Oh, Jack, why don't you let well enough alone?
I know what I'm doing, Mary. Come on, Shorty, let me have your violin. Yes, sir. Thanks.
It goes under your chin.
I know where it goes, don't worry. Wait till I tune up, Phil.
That cat ain't dead yet.
Phil, stop with that stuff, will you? No kidding. I wish you wouldn't be so puerile and banal.
Puerile and banal? What's that?
A dance team. Puerile and banal, the aristocrats of rhythm. They're a sensation.
Well, send them out the bowl. I'll give them a job.
Oh, fine. What a mentality. Phil, you know, you ought to take up pressing flowers so you'd buy a dictionary.
Look who's talking. You didn't know what puerile and banal meant yourself.
I knew they were words. I didn't think they were people. All right, Phil, I'm ready. Let's go.
Well, I guess we got to do it, boys. You know how scarce jobs are.
I broke a string.
All right, so we'll wait.
Tone needs it. Let's go. Can't you hear me calling when the rain and am a falling? That was Get the Moon Out of Your Eyes, played by Phil Harris and his orchestra, with violin hot licks by Sizzle Strings Benny. I guess that was bad, eh?
I'd like to be able to guess like that at Santa Anita.
Mary, you take my word for it. It was very good. Say, Phil, I think I'll come out the Wilshire Bowl and play with your orchestra tonight.
You do, and I'll slap that cover charge on you.
I'll pick up more than that in quarters.
Hey, speaking of dough, Jackson, that reminds me. What about the $10 you owe me on the World Series?
Oh, that's right. I had Detroit. Yes, sir, I forgot all about him. Well, Benny's a good loser. $10, eh, Phil?
Yep, $10.
Okay, I'll go out in the hall and get it for you.
Nobody will look. You can roll your sock down right here.
Now, don't get smart. I don't carry money in my sock anymore.
Oh, that's right. Not since that day at the circus.
You're darn right.
What happened, Mary?
A midget picked his ankle.
Yes, and if I ever catch that little runt, I'll beat the daylights out of him.
Why didn't you, Butch?
I chased him clear across the lot, but he ran down a gopher hole. A shrimp.
Boy, that's rich. Imagine grabbing dough out of a guy's sock.
How much did he get, Jack?
About $80,000.
It was not. Nowhere near that. Anyway, Phil, I'll go out in the hall and get you... Hey, wait a minute. I got the $10 right here.
Well, hand it over.
I'll hand it over. Don't rush me.
Okay.
You want it fair and square, and I'm going to give it to you. Yes, sir.
What are you waiting for, television?
Now... Here you are, Phil.
Thanks.
Now, don't squander it.
Oh, while we're on the subject, Jack, you and I might as well settle up, too. Here's the $5 I lost to you.
Later, Don.
What $5?
Never mind.
Hey, what's going on here, Jackson? Did you bet on Detroit and Cincinnati both?
Well, a guy can get mixed up, can't he?
Well, that beats everything.
Now, wait a minute, Mary. I bet $10 on Detroit, and I lost to Phil. And then I accidentally bet $5 on Cincinnati, and I won from Don. So I'm still out $5. But what do I care?
Ladies and gentlemen, you may not care whether Jack is out $5 or not, but you will care about those six delicious flavors of America's favorite gelatin dessert.
Oh, fine.
And whether you bet on Cincinnati or Detroit, you will find that you cannot go wrong when betting on Jell-O. That's Detroit, the whole trite, and nothing but Detroit.
Isn't that awful? Don, I smell a rat. Did Phil Harris give you that idea?
Oh, so you recognize my stuff now, eh?
Recognize it? I'll say I did.
I didn't. The wind was blowing the other way.
Well, you were very lucky, Mary. You know, there are days, Phil, when... Oh, hello, Dennis.
Hello, Mr. Benny. Am I in time for my song?
Yes, but it wouldn't hurt to get here earlier.
What for? I just stand around like a totem pole.
What are you complaining about? You sing a song every week, don't you?
Kenny Baker gets dialogue.
Never mind about Kenny Baker. How would you like to be in his shoes and work for a guy like Fred Allen?
I think Fred Allen is wonderful.
Why, you little fifth columnist. Where till I get you outside?
Run down a gopher hole, Dennis.
Oh, that midget again.
Hey, kid, did you hear about Jackson losing his dough at the circus?
No, what happened?
He got rolled by a Lilliputian.
Lilliputian?
Phil, that's Lilliputian. Look, Phil, whenever there are two words meaning the same thing, please use the short one. Anyway, it was my money, so forget about it.
Oh, say, Mr. Benny, that reminds me. Here's the $2.50 I owe you on the World Series.
Later, Dennis.
Oh. So you bet the same amount on both teams, eh, Sporty?
What do you mean, the same amount? Look, Mary, I lost $10 to Phil. I got $5 back from Don and $2.50 from Dennis, so I'm still out $2.50. Now, Dennis, let's have your song so that everybody can stop worrying about my financial affairs.
Okay.
Wait a minute. Come in.
Special delivery for Mary Livingston.
Here she is. A letter for you, Mary.
Thanks.
Hey, you're a little old for a messenger boy, aren't you?
Well, you twitch on rainy days yourself, Bob.
I'd like to push him down a gopher hole, too. You know? Who's the letter from, Mary?
It's a note from Mama.
Oh, your mother, eh? What's the Oscar Levant of New Jersey got to say?
Nothing. She just sent a clipping from the Plainfield paper about our first broadcast.
Oh.
Here's the headline. Livingston program returns to the air.
That's from Plainfield, all right.
And Miss Mary Livingston, daughter of that prominent society leader, Mrs. Scarlet Livingston.
Scarlet?
Yeah, she changes her name with every picture.
She ought to change it to Grapes of Wrath. That really fits.
Oh, Jack, just because Mama hates you, you don't have to be mean about it.
Okay, get back to the review of our show. What does it say?
Mary Livingston was her usual self. Charming, witty, and fascinating.
Well.
But the Blue Fairy Fantasy, written by Jack Benny, was nothing short of puerile and banal.
Let me see that. Well, I'll be darned. There it is. Go ahead.
Miss Livingston's father, Mr. Rhett Livingston.
Holy smoke.
Mr. Livingston had an unfortunate accident while listening to the broadcast. He was sitting in the car with the radio tuned on when the owner came along and punched him in the nose.
Serves him right.
When interviewed, Mr. Livingston said, hick.
Oh, drunk, too, right? Is that all?
Yes, I'm going to paste it in my scrapbook.
Well, paste it face down so nobody will read it. Are you ready for your song now, Dennis?
Yes, sir.
Well, open your mouth and let it go. Say, Mary, when you answer Scarlett, tell her General Sherman sends love.
I need no soft lights to enchant me if you'll only grant me the right to hold you ever so tight and to feel in the night the nearness of you. I've waited to meet someone like you. Please make my dreams come true. You are a part of me, deep in the heart of me. When you are near, I love you dear. It's not the pale moon that invites me, that thrills and delights me, oh no. It's just the nearness of you. It isn't your sweet conversation that brings this sensation, oh no. It's just the nearness of you. When you're in my arms and I feel you so close to me, all my wildest dreams come true. I need no soft lights to enchant me if you'll only grant me the right to hold you ever so tight and to feel in my mind.
That was The Nearness of You, sung by Dennis Day. That was very good, Dennis. I really think you have improved a lot this year.
Thank you. And say, Mr. Benny, before I forget it, can I mow your lawn Thursday instead of Wednesday this week?
Why, what's the matter with Wednesday? That's your regular day.
Well, Wednesday I have to go down and register for the draft. You know, it's conscription day.
Oh, that's right. I'll tell you what, Dennis, I'll pick you up at 3 o'clock, and we'll go down there together.
Why, you don't have to go, Jack. Only men up to the age of 36 have to register.
Oh, 36, huh? Well, I guess that lets me out. Yep,
You barely made the last war.
Yes, and the civil and the revolutionary. Are you happy?
Hey, Jackson, do I have to get in on this,
registration? Why, certainly, Phil. Every young American has to register.
What's it for? Oh, my God.
Phil, everybody who registers gets a number, and they send them all to Washington, put them in a big drum, and the lucky winners get a free vacation for 1 year at the expense of the government.
Say, that ain't bad, huh? Wow.
And you can take off those patent leather shoes. They're no good for marching. Anyway, Phil, you just be there Wednesday.
What about Rochester? He'll have to sign up too, won't he?
Yeah, I suppose I'll have to cook dinner myself Wednesday night. And incidentally, fellas, I've been having a little trouble with Rochester lately.
What's wrong?
Well, they gave him a big celebration the other night and elected him mayor of Central Avenue. When I got home yesterday, I found a sign on my house that said City Hall. I took that down in a hurry. Mary, get Rochester on the phone. I want him to pick me up at the El Capitan Theater tonight.
Okay.
Hope it's not too much trouble for him.
Hey, Jackson, what are you doing over at the El Capitan Theater?
Well, Mary and I have been playing there in a show all week. It's a benefit for the British Red Cross.
Well, I didn't know anything about it.
Well, that's my fault, Phil. I should have taken out an ad in the racing form. You haven't read a paper.
Your number's ringing, Jack.
Thanks. Give me the phone. Hello? Hello?
Mr. Benny's residence is Howard the Mayor speaking.
Rochester.
Oh, is that you, Mr. Benny?
Yes, it's me. Now listen, Your Honor. I wonder if I could trouble you to bring the car down to the El Capitan Theater and pick me up about 11:30 tonight.
Okay, can I put the top up?
Rochester, in this nice autumn weather, it's much better riding with the top down.
Yeah, but my silk hat keeps blowing off.
You don't have to wear a silk topper. Your chauffeur's cap looks very good on you.
With a cutaway coat? Oh, boy!
Now, Rochester, stop being so fancy. Anyhow, what's the good of being mayor of Central Avenue?
I get a discount on ribs.
All right, now, Rochester, the purpose of this call was to have you pick me up in the Maxwell. Now, you be down there by 11:30.
Okay, so long.
So long.
Oh, by the way, Mr. Benny, are you aware of the fact the automobile show is in town?
Yes, I'm aware. What about it?
Well, I was thinking you might want to trade the Maxwell for something less puerile and venal.
There's nothing wrong with the Maxwell. It's in perfect mechanical condition.
Boss, have you ever lifted up that hood when the motor's running?
No.
Well, don't do it. The fan belt will slap you right in the face.
That fan belt can be fixed.
You gotta catch it first.
Now, that's just silly.
And the oil flies out like Boomtown.
Now, Rochester, I don't want to hear any more about the car. You just be at the El Capitan Theater at 11:30.
It's uphill. I better leave now.
Leave when you want to. Goodbye.
So long. Oh, say, boss.
Now what?
About that little bet we made. Did I have Detroit or Cincinnati?
You had Detroit, and you owe me $2.
I thought so.
Never mind.
I'll pay you tonight, boss.
Okay, goodbye. Always wants to trade in the car.
Why, Jack, do you mean to say that you even won $2 from Rochester?
Listen, Mary, I'm still loser. I paid $10 to Phil. I got $5 from Don, $2.50 from Dennis, and $2 from Rochester. That's $9.50. I'm still out $0.50. Now, come on, we got to get over to the theater and do that benefit.
Okay.
So long, fellas. Hey, you can wind up the show yourselves, can't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, go ahead.
We'll see you next time. So long. See, Mary, when we do the benefit tonight, I want you to give a good show because it's our last performance.
I will. Don't worry.
Oh, wait a minute. Here's the check room. I want to get my hat. Hello, Tommy.
Hello, Mr. Benny. How'd the program go tonight?
Oh, pretty good. Can I have my hat?
Oh, yes, sir. There you are.
Thanks.
Oh, by the way, Mr. Benny, here's that 50 cents I owe you.
Oh, that's right. You did bet on Detroit. Thanks, kid.
Hey, Jack.
What?
You can close the books now.
Yeah, come on, let's go.
Back in Grandmother's day, when guests wanted to praise one of her tasty desserts, they often used to say it's as smooth as peaches and cream. But today, folks will get the idea even quicker if you say it's just as smooth as peaches and jelly. Now, there's a combination, ladies and gentlemen, that's really smooth, really easy to take. Yes, sir, and easy to make, too. And all you do is dissolve one package of orange jello in a pint of hot water in peach juice. Chill until slightly thickened, and then fold in one cup of sliced peaches drained. Then mold, and it's all over but the shouting, and that's sure to come when the family gets its first happy glimpse of this lovely golden dessert. Of course, the regular peach season is over, but you can still enjoy peaches that are actually orchard fresh by making this jello treat with Bird's Eye quick frozen sliced peaches. Or if Bird's Eye peaches are not readily available, use canned sliced peaches. Either way, I know you'll like this swell dessert a lot. Take it from me, there's nothing more delicious than juicy golden yellow peaches and rich, shimmering orange jello.
News for thrifty housewives. Log Cabin syrup for less money. Popular table size, not more than 18 cents in most stores. Ask your grocer about his new low price. Remember, same matchless Log Cabin flavor. So delicious with piping hot pancakes or waffles. Only the price has changed. Tomorrow, buy Log Cabin syrup at the new low price. The lowest ever. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Well, hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. Welcome to a great Friday with Fred Allen. Now, for you folks that are worried because, you know, the Wednesday show and the Sunday show I played of Fred Allen were from the 1946-47 season, and they sounded horrible. Horrible. By any stretch of the imagination, they were bad. And I just brought him to you because, you know, I still enjoy listening to him. And I thought, you know, maybe you folks would too. No one's emailed me yet complaining or anything. But, man, I listened to him again. It was like, ooh, it's hard to listen to those. Well, welcome to Friday. Everything's cool. Friday sounds great. These shows are wonderful. You will notice a huge difference in quality, audio quality on this episode tonight. I will warn you. There are times, certain parts, it sounds like, of the transcription disc were damaged, little bits of it. Like, you'll hear a 10-second spot that has crackles in it and things, but then it'll go away. It happens probably 6 times, 7 times during the course of this recording, but it's so, so worth it. If you're listening in, you are in for a treat tonight because... I don't know about you, but I've listened to a lot of old-time radio. And even on Jack shows, even on any shows, I listen to them and I find myself not laughing out loud very much anymore. Usually I just smile and enjoy them and, you know, still think they're funny. It just doesn't make me laugh. This show tonight, I kid you not, I listened to it and I think I laughed out loud at least 6 or 7 different times, maybe more than that. It's a great episode. And all of these Fred Allen so far this season of the 1940-41 season, I've just really enjoyed them. I haven't laughed as much at these until this episode. This episode I laughed the most at. Anyway, I'm not going to give much away because I want you to be able to laugh at it too. I'll give one. There's a point where... the parts where I laugh is the parts where something goes wrong and then Fred makes a joke about it. There's some joke in here about
that just falls flat. Nobody laughs at it about the person holding, doing something with one hand and doing something with the other hand. And Fred comes in and says, "Too bad you don't have a third hand to hold the egg you just laid." You know, what a great line. I just loved it. And I cracked up on that one. Fred not only cracked me up on this episode, he also cracked up his wife. Portland Hoffa is just dying laughing at Fred. And he's like, "I don't even need an audience. She can be my audience from now on," or whatever. It's a good bit. And then later on, you could tell Kenny Baker is having so much trouble acting with Fred Allen and not cracking up, which is great. It's just a fun episode. And, of course, Fred at the end plays One Long Pan, right? One Long Pan, yeah, which is his take on a Chinese character. Probably not politically correct today, but darn funny. And I found a picture of him from the collection on Google Books. I've been searching there, and I love that they have all of the Life magazines available from all through history, and they're all searchable. So I was searching for Fred Allen, and I found these great pictures of Fred, great advertisements. For weeks, we're going to have new pictures of Fred that are tied directly into the Texaco theater. They're ads for Texaco that he was in that are just beautiful. They're sort of color. It was a black and white magazine at the time, but they threw in reds and things to make it look like it was color, and it really did a pretty good job, really, for how little color there is there. And so I've got all those that I'm going to be sharing, and they're done wonderfully. They're like a whole page long, but they're really thin, which works out beautiful for my webcast. So I can just, on my podcast, I can just put them up there, and I think they're going to look really nice. But tonight's isn't one of those. Tonight's is a picture I found of Fred. He was in a bunch of different costumes. In this one, he was looking like a Chinese person probably trying to look like One Long Pan, because he's done this skit before. And so I put that up, since it tied in so well with tonight's episode. This episode has more Kenny Baker than we've seen than we've heard before, and he's funnier, and he reminds me more of the Kenny Baker from the Jack Benny show. So a really nice episode. The person they interview is great. The whole bit with this, I can't remember his name. I think it's Ernst Peabody, who's the who's trying to make it where they tone down the noise in New York. And just Fred is so good at interviewing folks that are everyday folks and just bringing out the best in them. And their panel discussion about whether radio shows should have a studio audience or not is really interesting discussion, actually. And it's interesting to see how that discussion with real people, that panel that he has, I think over time sort of morphed into the whole Allen's Alley thing. So anyway, great episode, my favorite show of the week. It's been these Fred Allen shows have been my favorite show of the week every week for the past since this season started, and I'm just so glad that I found these. Because still, I mean, what I originally had of these wouldn't have started all these episodes I played. I didn't find until just this last spring. I didn't have any episodes until January of 1941. You know, so that's coming up here, but all these, and I have every episode now up until, I think I have the entire season, and some of them I'm going to have an East and West Coast feed, so we can actually pick which Fred Allen show is going to sound the best. I can't believe actually that, and I should almost run them both now that I think about it, because I can't imagine Fred's show not be drastically different, because he does so much ad-libbing. I'll have to think that through. Anyway, enjoy. I'm excited about this series, as you can tell. And tune in tomorrow for, of course, more OTR shows. Oh, also, I was reading a post online, and it was interesting because it hit both shows that are on every Friday night here. they were saying how Fred Allen captured the spirit of the time better than the Jack Benny show, because Jack's show was basically about Jack and his gang, and Fred Allen's show was more about America and what was going on. And they said the other show that really caught that was Fibber, McGee, and Molly. And so I just thought, I think it's kind of cool that we have both these shows.
Fred Allen in person.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you, Jimmy, for that flattering introduction. You know, it certainly is a novelty to have an announcer speak well of the comedian. So many programs come on the air, and by the time the announcer finishes describing the comedian, it sounds as though the guy is wanted for hopscotch in Walla Walla or something.
Say, Mr. Allen.
Yes, Kenny, what is it?
I've been having a wonderful time all week.
Well, who asked you? I mean, what was that?
Gee, that's right. I skipped two lines.
You skipped two lines? Well, you're not nervous tonight, are you, Kenny?
No, but... Well, you know how it is. I got so many laughs last week, these straight lines don't mean anything to me anymore.
Well, we've got to have some straight lines in the script, you know.
Shall I schmaltz them up and get some laughs?
No, don't schmaltz them up. Tell me what have you been doing all week, Kenny?
I've been having a wonderful time. This is where that comes in, I guess.
Yes, well, I think it fitted better the first time, the way you had it. Well, now, look, Kenny, I'm pretty busy. I've got to get along with my newsreel.
Am I in the newsreels, Mr. Allen?
No, you're not, Kenny, but later on in the sketch, you have a fat dramatic part.
Have I? Oh, boy, wait till Dennis Day hears me tonight.
Yes, sir. You won't be pure island banal, I'll tell you that. And while Kenny brings his enthusiasm to a boil, we turn to the latest news of the week. The Texaco News presents Your World on Parade. New York City, New York. Recent advertising campaign enlightens public on beneficial proteins and minerals to be obtained through eating meat. As a tribute to the packing industry, Mr. Edgar Guest has written a poem called Meat on the Table. Texaco News, sensing new commercial field for American poets, interviews several little-known bards to get their reactions to new markets for their poetic wares. First, a poet from the fields, Mr. What is your name again, sir?
Bliss Bullfinch.
Bliss Bullfinch?
And no cracks.
Have you read Mr. Guest's poem, Bliss?
Meat on the Table? Oh, yes.
You have?
I gave a reading of Meat on the Table only last week. Ours is a land of steak and chops, of pork, beef, lamb, and veal.
I know, I'm quite familiar with it. Well, where did you give this reading?
In a refrigerator on 14th Street.
In a refrigerator?
Yes, it was a warm day outside. The meat in the poem might have spoiled.
I understand, Liz. But tell me, Mr. Bullfinch, has Mr. Guest's meat poem inspired you?
No. For my inspiration, I have had to turn to the vegetable kingdom.
Oh, I see. The vegetable kingdom.
Yes. Have you heard my latest vegetable sonnet? Is envy turning you green, little pea?
No, I regret to say that I haven't.
Perhaps you've heard my salad rondelay. Fickle lettuce, you have no heart.
No, I haven't. I heard
perhaps,
that either.
Perhaps my soliloquy while bending over a barrel. Sauerkraut, you mustn't pout.
Well, what truck garden gem are you reciting for us tonight, Bliss old boy?
Brussels sprout.
That is the title?
Yes.
Brussels sprout? Well, go right ahead.
A man's best friend is a Brussels sprout. Its praises from hill and housetop I shout. From millionaire down to the little boy scout. A man's best friend is a Brussels sprout.
Very good.
A Brussels sprout is man's best friend. If you've hurt a sprout, go make amend. Don't abuse a sprout in jest or fun. For every Brussels sprout is some cabbage's son.
Well done. Well well done, and I wanted it medium rare. But thank you. Thank you, Bliss Bullfinch. Next, a poet who has a rendezvous with oblivion the minute he leaves us here tonight. Mr. Swinburne McGee. Are you a commercial poet, Swinburne?
Yeah, I'm freelancing.
And by freelancing, you mean?
I ain't eating regular.
But you have been writing poetry.
Oh, yeah. I've been hustling the muse when I get a chance.
The muse doesn't resent it? Well, now what about Mr. Guest's poem on meat?
Oh, I got a twist on it. I wrote a poem on fish.
Fish?
Yeah. It's a piscatorial pastoral.
It is? Can you spare it? What is it called?
All hail the sardine.
Sounds mighty intriguing. go right ahead, please.
All hail the sardine, most short-lived of fishes. No wonder he's selfish and lives as he wishes. When a sardine is born, he forecasts his lifespan, saying, last night I was a boy, but today I am a can.
No question about it, and thank you. It has been anything but a pleasure to have you here tonight. Our next tattered troubadour is Stark Devereaux III. What is your specialty, Stark?
For 20 years, I was known as the King of Cliché.
The King of Cliché, really?
Yes. Then for 2 years, I didn't write a line.
You were written out?
No, no, I lost my beret.
And you have been writing bareheaded ever since?
Oh, no. I put one hand on my head and write with the other.
Too bad you haven't a third hand. You could pick up that egg. But Have you read Mr. Guest's poem, Meat on the Table?
Oh, no. I poo-poo vitamin vert.
You do?
Yes. I concentrate on the inanimate. I glorify the group.
Well, how do you mean?
Well, a cow alone is a cow. Together, it's a herd.
Oh, I see.
A bird alone is a bird. Together, it's a flock.
Yes.
A thing alone is a thing. Together, it's a bundle.
Oh. And your masterpiece is dedicated to a bundle.
Yes.
And what is it called?
Pooh, to me it's string.
Would you recite it for us, please?
You can call it twine or whipcord, thread or ribbon, anything. If it can be knotted, tied up, pooh, to me it's string. You can put it on a fiddle, for pizzicato or for swing. Call it A or call it E-flat, pooh, to me it's string. You can hide it in a necklace, say it makes your phone bell ring. Call it hemp or jute or oakum, pooh and pooh, to me it's string.
Well, thank you very much.
String is string.
Well, thank you very much.
Oh, I was so wrapped up.
String will do it. And now, last and no doubt least, a young poetess who always carries a suitcase because she knows she's going places, Miss Steffi Buxbaum.
I am appearing courtesy Mandel's Nut Shop.
Oh, you are to the Mandel's Nut Shop?
Yes. Tonight I should be working. Mr. Mandel is letting me off.
Oh, I see. I didn't.
But only on one condition.
You have to.
First, I mention Mandel's Nut Shop. It's a must.
Well, have you been on the air before?
Air, he says. I am breathing it.
No, I mean, have you been on any radio programs before?
Every night I'm appearing. Always it's a quiz show. Double or leave it. Ask it, smask it. I'm a regular Vox mom.
A Vox mom?
Oh, that's a Vox pop, only a woman.
Oh, I never would have known. Thank you very much. Now, but you are a poetess, Miss Buxbaum.
What else? But by Steffi Buxbaum, their poems is only about something you couldn't see.
You mean hidden things around the nut shop?
Exactly. Like a bugle call to a pecan kernel.
Oh. You can't see those, can you?
Uh-huh.
And still you write about them.
That's right.
Yes.
Gesundheit to a cashew.
What poem would you like to recite for us tonight, Steffi?
To a seed inside a prune.
Well, you can't find anything more concealed than that.
Who is telling who?
Well, excuse me. Excuse me, go right ahead.
Thank you. To a seed inside a prune. Hello, little seed inside a prune. What's new in there? What is doing? Is it morning, night, or noon, little seed inside the prune? Little seed inside a prune, wrapped up in your black cocoon. Would you with the world commune, little seed inside a prune? Oh, lucky you, little seed in a prune, safe from the world and its misfortune. To you I say it would be a boon if man was a seed inside a prune.
Kenny Baker sings for us Because.
All afternoon talking with a Texaco engineer, and I really got the lowdown.
Yes, but you can't explain.
Oh, look, Jimmy, I may not remember all the technical phrases the Texaco engineer used, but I certainly can convey the approximate idea.
All right, then what did the engineer say?
Well, he said that Fire Chief starts fast and picks up quick because it has equilibrium on the bias with a scallop rampant on the girth with reticulation-absorbing inertia for emergency duty power.
Is that what he said?
Well, that's the way it sounded to me, Jimmy. As I got it, Fire Chief is so good because it's fiddly with the double warts and hemmed in on the bustle at approximately slurp. How am I doing, Jimmy?
Well, frankly, Fred, I think you're octane happy.
Well, it could be.
Yeah. But most of us would be if we heard a technical explanation of the reasons for Fire Chief's...
Through the rhyme. Very nice, Al, too. And now, ladies and
Mr. Allen.
Yes, Kenny.
Is this where I do my acting?
No, not now. A little later on.
Oh. To be or not to be? Is that a question?
Well, yeah. Always has been up to now. Of course, you might change the slant on it. And now, ladies and gentlemen, our guest tonight...
Hello, Mr. Allen.
Oh, hello. You're a little late, aren't you?
Yes, I had to take Mama down to the auto show, and I just got back.
Say, how is the auto show this year?
Oh, the new models are wonderful. They've got big cars and those little Crosleys.
Yes, I know. A lot of radio comedians have big cars and little Crosleys, too. Present company accepted, I hope. Well, did you see any of the models with the new fluid drive?
Yes. And I saw one car, instead of a speedometer, it has a television set.
You can tell how fast you're going by television?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. At 30 miles an hour, you see a motorcycle policeman. He's smiling.
Uh-huh. That's a new system waiting in between the sentences, isn't it? Well, you... Yeah? Don't tell me you're so confused you're now waiting at punctuation marks. In case. You say with this new television idea at 30 miles an hour, you see a motorcycle policeman, but he's smiling.
Uh-huh.
Eh? Well, if you're doing 50...
You see your finance company man. He's pulling his hair out.
Is he alone? And if you're... let's say you're going 70.
You see your will being opened by a stranger.
At 70 miles an hour, your will is being opened by a stranger. We both could have waited there, you see. I have caught a cross-town bus with less waiting than... Well, that's a wonderful idea, even if it didn't pan out so well. Tell me, have all the new models got radios this year?
All except the ones that Major Bowes advertises.
Well, what happens if you want entertainment in one of the Major's cars?
Well, you turn the knob and a unit comes out.
And the mayor of the Honor City right behind us. Well, I guess that covers the... Quiet now. That should come from other sources. Well, I guess that covers the... Listen, if we can do that, we can do away with the audience entirely. I tell them and you laugh at them. Well, I guess that covers the auto show. May come to that yet, too. What about our guest?
Have you ever heard of the League for Less Noise?
Oh, yes. I remember when the Anti-Noise League was started here in New York a few years back. I wonder what progress has been made.
There is only one man to ask.
You mean our guest?
Yes. Mr. Allen, meet the president of the League for Less Noise, Mr. Ernest Peabody.
Well, good evening, Mr. Peabody.
Good evening, Mr. Allen.
You are the president and founder of the League for Less Noise.
Yes, I organized the league back in 1935.
Well, do you devote all of your time to anti-noise work?
No, I am president of the Peabody Engineering Corporation here in New York and chairman of the board of Peabody Limited in London.
And you receive a salary, too, as president of the league?
Oh, no. The league is a non-profit organization supported entirely by voluntary contributions.
Well, tell me, what prompted you to start this Down with Hubbub crusade, Mr. Peabody? You weren't frightened by a decibel as a boy, were you?
No, but I have been a resident of New York for many years. The street noises seemed to be getting worse.
And you decided to do something about it.
Yes, the league was formed, and after holding several meetings, we decided to try to enlist Mayor LaGuardia's support.
Well, how did you contact the mayor? Did you hail him as he passed by on a hook and ladder?
No, we went down to City Hall.
You took a chance, eh? Did the mayor approve of your anti-noise movement?
Yes, he gave us a fine send-off. And today we have his full cooperation and the support of the police department.
Yes, the mayor has done many wonderful things. You know, I've always claimed that keeping Mayor LaGuardia in the city hall is like making a loaf of bread. Having a little flour has saved us a lot of dough. Tell me, Mr. Peabody, how does the league go about curbing noise? You know, Gesundheit. Sneezing is all right. You have a right to come in here and have a little fun on your own hook. But tell me, if Mr. Peabody and I are interrupting the sneezing, we'll be glad to see you. But tell me, Mr. Peabody, how does the league go about curbing noise? You know, apart from distributing posters and literature.
We receive thousands of complaints about noise, which we ask the Safety Bureau to investigate. And they're doing a fine job.
Well, don't tell me that a person here in New York City can get 30 days for committing a blowout in his bubble gum. Or that the police can force a man wearing a loud necktie to put on a muffler.
The league isn't unreasonable, Mr. Allen.
No.
We're merely trying to curtail the most unnecessary and annoying noises.
Well, what sound, in your opinion, Mr. Peabody, is public nuisance number one?
The automobile horn.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the kind guaranteed to be heard 15 miles away.
Well, auto horns seem to be getting more versatile. They even play melodies these days. I read about a new musical automobile horn that's coming out before you can even blow it. You have to take 6 lessons at Madame La Wurlitzer.
That kind of music is ghastly.
Well, the music, yes, but the horns in themselves are harmless.
Yes, but the chronic horn blower is a nuisance. Also, a danger in city traffic. That's why the Safety Bureau is handling the anti-noise campaign.
Well, tell me, what steps have you taken to curb horn blowing?
Well, for one thing, during the first 6 months of this year, over 40,000 warnings and 3,000 summonses were given out for unnecessary honking.
In other words, you hope to eliminate the toot, the whole toot, and nothing but the toot.
Exactly. Statistics prove that if unnecessary horn blowing is stopped, we'll have a safer driving and fewer accidents.
Well, after automobile horns, what is the next ranking audible annoyance on your noise parade?
Radio.
Mr. Peabody, you're on mighty dangerous ground there, sir.
Oh, I don't mean anything personal, Mr. Allen.
No?
Our problem is the person who plays his radio too loud and too late.
Yes, they are pests. And there are other neighborhood blights, too, aren't there?
Yes. We try to cope with loud-voiced peddlers, street musicians, and the owners of noisy animals. We have practically removed sound trucks from the streets and loudspeakers from store windows.
Very good.
We've helped to have the building laws amended so that instead of riveting, a less noisy process is used.
Well, you're certainly doing a wonderful work. I know the League has made New Yorkers more noise conscious, and eventually that it is going to make our town a more pleasant and safer place in which to live.
I'm sure it will, Mr. Allen.
Now, before you go tonight, I think I should make a little contribution to further the interests of your work.
All contributions gratefully received.
Fine. Well, there are probably several million radios tuned in on us at this very moment, and as a gesture of goodwill and as a salute to the League for Less Noise, Mr. Peabody, I am donating 10 seconds of absolute silence on the entire network. Now, here we go. There you are, Mr. Peabody. How is that?
Mr. Allen, those were the pleasantest 10 seconds I ever spent in New York.
Thank you a lot.
And don't forget, Noise Abatement Week throughout the country starts October 21st.
I'll make a note of it. Thank you, and good night, Mr. Ernest Peabody. Ladies and gentlemen, from the Broadway hit Louisiana Purchase, come the Martins, our favorite quartet, to sing for you When You Climb Those Golden Stairs. Which have written in to me, General Delivery, my home address, asking if they're going to have a chance to use their ski suits this winter. And so tonight, for advance information on the weather for the coming months, we bring you the Dean of Amateur Weather Prophets, Mr. Seymour Drip. Tell us, Mr. Drift, on what do you base your forecast for the coming winter?
My meteorological prognostications are based upon a survey of squirrels' nests.
Really? Squirrels' nests?
Yes.
Mighty interesting.
Yes, I have just completed a tabulation of 543 squirrels' domiciles in trees in Central Park. The results have been averaged, and a norm has been struck.
I see. You, Norm, didn't suffer any consequences, I hope. You took a poll, you say, but you did it in trees. Now, what were the results of your survey?
The typical squirrel's nest was found to contain the following items. A, one soggy Dixie cup.
Yes.
B, two subway transfers.
Yes.
And C, a squirrel.
And you have made a weather forecast from this statistical mulligan, these figures?
Yes, I have. After careful analysis, I am prepared to announce the exact length of the coming winter. Winter will last...
Yes?
From the end of autumn to the beginning of spring.
Thank you very much. You've marked up everything very nicely. Well, I see if I want to know anything about the coming winter, I had better consult the official weatherman. What does the weatherman say, Jimmy?
Well, in most of our man's round table, where three persons selected from our studio audience are invited to give their opinions on a question that concerns some prominent issue of the day. This little session is entirely unrehearsed. Fred takes his place at the round table where he meets his fellow debaters for the first time. Are you ready,
Fred? I didn't think you were going to make it, Jimmy. You're awake in there. Yes, I am ready and awake, Jimmy. Portland, would you kindly introduce the first member of our board, please?
Yes, Mr. Lionel Toll, New York City.
Good evening, Mr. Toll.
Good evening.
May I... I didn't wake you up.
No, you didn't, sir.
But, may I ask your profession, Mr. Toll?
I'm a motion picture trade paper editor and publicity director.
What trade paper, do you mind saying?
The Independent.
The Independent? Well, you mean that's a paper that is sponsored by the independent theater owners in America?
That's right.
How many independent theater owners are there, motion picture theater owners in the country?
About 12,000.
Really? 12,000, huh? Do you think I made a picture at Paramount this summer with a famous character actor out there? a nephew of Boris Karloff's, you might know. Now, do you think the independent theater owners will be able to handle this attraction when it comes out in December?
If they get the picture on a percentage basis.
If they get it on a percentage.
Yeah, most of the percentage should be Alan.
Well, that's very kind of you, Mr. Toll. I thought you meant that Benny and I would also have to service the theater, sweep out while the picture... Thanks a lot, Mr. Toll. I'm drooling here. I'm getting distance. I hope you don't mind. And now, Portland.
Miss Marion Miner from Mystic, Connecticut.
Good evening, Miss Miner.
Good evening, Mr. Allen.
May I ask your profession or calling?
I'm a child's nurse.
A child's nurse?
That's right.
You feel at home here tonight?
Not exactly.
No, you should. I'm in my second childhood.
Well, I didn't know that.
I'd like to continue this discussion a little farther, but unfortunately, I shan't be able to. I hope you don't mind.
Perfectly all right.
Thank you. So nice of you, Mr. now, Portland.
Mr. Harry Klein from New York City.
Good evening, Mr. Klein.
Good evening, Mr. Allen.
May I ask your calling, profession, racket, or industry?
Short order cook.
You're a short order cook, are you?
That's fine, yes.
Tell me, Mr. Klein. Don't. Jim's doing ventriloquism. Mr. Klein can speak for himself. Jim's around there doing the burger. Let Mr. Klein alone. Well, that brings us to our question, Mr. Klein. And tonight, in spite of Uncle Jim, and tonight we take up a question that concerns radio. Ever since the radio set has replaced the magic lantern in most homes, except in Beverly Hills, studio audiences have been a subject for debate. Many listeners claim that the riotous laughter and applause of studio audiences spoil the program for them at home. Other listeners say that the studio audiences liven up the programs and that hearing others having a good time increases their enjoyment of the programs at home. Now, our question tonight is, do you think that studio audiences are an asset or a liability to radio programs? Now, Mr. Toll, how do you feel about studio audiences?
I really don't feel very greatly about them or not.
You don't? You don't?
Personally, I like to listen to the radio at home.
You'd rather listen to the radio at home than in the studio.
Yeah, because I can turn the program off at home.
Of course, that's an advantage we have in the studio. Once you get in here, we lock the doors. I mean, of course you can't do that. We're working on a thing now. If you tune us in, it automatically bolts your door. We're going to get the people at home, too. Well, you'll rather hear a program at home. The effect is
that's
greater.
Right.
There's some illusion, and you enjoy it more.
That's
is that right?
True.
Thank you, sir. Miss Miner, how do you feel about studio audiences?
I also rather hear a program at home.
You would? Why, it puts the baby to sleep or something?
Well, it helps, but some of the studio programs, well, they're different than they are when you hear them at home.
You mean there's no illusion when you come to the studio?
Well?
I mean, you see me with these bags under my eyes. Now, after all, at least you hear my voice on the air. There aren't any bags in my voice. Or are there?
No, there aren't.
There aren't. You would rather hear programs without the studio reaction.
That's right.
Yeah, you don't think it's fair if you hear a shriek or a laugh in the studio and don't understand what it is at home. You feel cheated, do you?
Yes, a bit.
A bit.
But I still rather hear them at home.
You still rather hear them at home. Would you rather have heard this program at home tonight?
No, no. No.
Well, all right, Mr. Klein, how do you feel about it? Do you have a radio in the lunchroom?
Yes, we do.
You're a short order cook, but I'm a long order talker. I hope you don't mind. You do? How do you feel about studio audiences, Mr. Klein?
I would rather be in a studio and listen to it.
You would rather be in the studio than hear it on the air?
Yeah.
Why don't you sell your radio? Just do away with the middleman and get down here every night. Something's always going on.
You'd rather hear it in the studio.
That's right.
Well, what do you do with the radio in the place? Keep it turned off?
You know, we keep that for the customers.
Oh, for the customers. Not to take their mind off the cuisine by any chance. Huh? Well, I suppose when you serve one poached egg, you turn on the Lone Ranger. It's sort of... Well, I'm sorry I brought the whole thing up. Personally, I feel that all radio programs should be presented for the folks at home. The studio audience, I think, should attend broadcast as sightseers rather than to see how the program is executed than to expect a show put on for their special benefit. Before this audience here tonight can get at me, I am leaving through a crack in the air conditioning. The meeting is adjourned, and thank you all for your staying up so late. Say, Kenny.
Yes,
Kenny,
Mr. Allen.
Oh, you're there, are you?
Yeah.
I've heard of a delayed take, but not a delayed line before. That's a new... Well, all these new things cropping
is
up.
Is this where I do my acting?
Well, no, Kenny. This is where you sing again. I have it on my cuff here. What would you suggest?
I'll never smile again.
Give us more music.
Quiet, quiet, please.
No comedy, more music.
You down in the front row, quiet, please.
Who, me?
Yes, you. I have been watching you ever since this program started. I have never seen anybody get more unenjoyment out of comedy. To put it bluntly, Bud, I have seen happier looking pans than yours under ice boxes.
Well, it ain't my fault. I don't feel so good.
What's the matter? Something you ate? Are you allergic to comedians? Has your wife been beating you?
Nah. I've just been sitting there thinking. I drove 25 miles to get here tonight. Tolling me old clunk along the highway, getting hung up in traffic. Looking all over town for a place to park.
Uh-huh.
As soon as the program's over, I gotta go back to where I parked, get hung up in traffic some more, and then tow me old trunk back home. Oh, it's a hibiscus circle.
Yeah. You took the words out of my mouth, and I didn't want them in there. Thank you very much. Well, if it's, let me tell you, friend, if it's driving that's put you in this mood, you've certainly come to the right place. Through a strange coincidence, our Mr. Elliot is about to give our listeners a message that can change your entire mental attitude. Would you mind giving it, Larry?
What sort of mood were you in the last time you drove your car? Was it one of those matter-of-fact, not much fun in it feelings? If so...
Spot announcement opening at the station next Friday. That was very nice. And now, tonight, the Texaco workshop player...
Is this where I do my acting, Mr. Allen?
Yes, Kenny. Here's your part.
Oh, gee. Do I play the lead?
Well, I wouldn't say it's the...
I get it. I'm a stooge.
You know what Shakespeare said, Kenny.
All the world's a stooge?
Now, wait a minute. You have done enough to Bill tonight. Now, you go over in the corner and study your lines.
Yes, sir.
Just registered. The military thing is in his voice already. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, lay quiet. Quiet, you. The guy from WOR running his own broadcast. The Texaco Workshop players present a blood-curdling mystery. It's called Death Takes a Boniface, or One Long Pan Was Disguised as a Girdle, so they knew he was closing in. Curtain, Alfredo.
Thank you, and hello, everyone. This is your man about town, broadcasting the outstanding nightlife event of the season. I'm speaking from the bamboo room of the Typhoon. The new tropical night spot that's opening tonight to join the beachcombers and the hurricane, a society rendezvous. Or rendezvous is rather, it's plural. And here's the owner of the Typhoon, Sherman Swank himself. Say a few words, Sherman.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. Drop into the Typhoon and try my new tropical cocktail, the Zambi. The Zambi is made from a secret jungle formula. And I am the only one who knows...
No. Now nobody knows.
Sherman, are you hurt?
Oh, I'm dying.
Oh.
Get my creditors for pallbearers. It's the last chance they'll have to carry me.
Yes.
This is terrible,
folks.
Sherman Swank, owner of the Typhoon, has just been murdered. They're locking the doors. No suspects can get away. This is a mystery that will baffle the police. Who will take the case? Will it be J. Edgar Hoover? Will it be Sherlock Holmes? Will it be one long pad?
Hello? Yeah, this is the FBI. What? Somebody just shot a nightclub owner? You got the wrong FBI, mister. This is the Fuller Brush Institute.
Are you there? Yes, this is Sherlock Holmes. What? Sorry, old boy. I can't take the case. No, I'm just sitting down to dinner. I'm about to have my soup. Quick, Watson, the noodle.
Hello, Detective One Long Pan's confidential secretary speaking. Yeah, Long Pan will take the case. I'll call him. He's over in the automat seeing if the slots are white with campaign buttons. Long Pan will be right over.
Come in, come in.
Gleeting. Thought I'd never get here. Gleeting. Radio car. Some man haul radio car up. Greeting of a smokestool kid, eh? Detective One Long Pan reporting. I'll never smile again. I lost my upper plate.
Hey, what is this? Who are you, you Mongolian hepcap?
I am Detective One Long Pan.
Oh, well, you're just in time. Sherman Swank, the owner of this nightclub, has just been murdered.
Murder? Who are you, Mr. Big Shop?
I am Monty Cuff, Sherman's partner.
Very good. Where's Body? Body and murder case very important.
I had Sherman brought in the office here.
Then we are not alone?
No, the body's there in the corner, under that tablecloth.
Aesop say nightclub owner who die on the tablecloth still have cover. Long Pan, pick up cloth. Oh, pick up. Oh, I see you.
Poor Sherman. Look at him. Shot right through the sneer.
Cool bullet hole. Very baffling. Long Pan, zip into action. Long Pan, examine a suspect. Where are suspects?
I got everybody locked in the club. Nobody can leave here until you say so.
Very good. Long Pan.
I say, which one of you is a detective?
I am Detective One Long Pan, buddy. Oriental Arsenic Lupin. What do you want, kiddo?
I've got to go. I'll miss my bus for West Orange, New Jersey.
Why, your bus left. I just hear bus. Why you catch him high, Mr. High Talk?
I have to beat the curfew. If I'm not in bed by 10 o'clock, the mayor will take away my Dick Tracy badge.
What you doing nightclub, Rover boy? What you doing nightclub, you bad boy? I saw One Long Pan.
I just came in to get a ginger ale. I heard two shots.
Excuse me, which candidate are you going to vote for?
Who are you, brother?
I'm Dr. Callop. I'm taking a presidential straw vote. Your choice, please.
Oh, well, count me. One vote for, what's his name, the Republican?
Oh, the Republican, yes.
One vote for the other guy, the Democrat.
Yes, the Democrat, yes.
One vote for Confucius.
Confucius is not running.
Long Pan light Confucius in. Confucius run on laundry. Take a favorite song.
I see. And who are you voting for? You in the corner.
That's a dead body.
Oh, I see. Well, that's one vote for McKinley. Well, goodbye.
Doctor have soft job. Aesop say man make good living count straw. It ain't hay.
Excuse me.
Just a minute, buddy. Who are you?
I'm the fella has to catch the bus, remember?
You stay here, Mr. Commuter, not go home, East Grapefruit.
It's West Orange.
I don't care, South Cantaloupe. Nobody leave this a nightclub.
Oh, shoot. If you want me, I'll be inside spinning my yo-yo.
Okay.
Look, Long Pan, we're not getting any place. Sherman is dead. Who murdered him?
Long Pan soon find out. Jig time.
Hey, where's that Mongolian flat for?
Oh, who are you, Mr. Hot Patoot?
I'm Muriel Latoot.
She's the hat check girl, Long Pan.
Yeah, and I know who committed the murder.
Huh? Well, you come clean, the short, dark, and soft egg. Who bump off your boss, Sherman Schwank?
It was Louis the Twitch.
Louis the Twitch?
Yeah, that roughneck that owns the club sarong next door.
Say, Louis might have done it at that. I saw him coming in.
Why you suspect Louis the Edge, Missy?
I'll tell you why. Because he didn't check his gun.
Are you sure, Muriel?
I seen it sticking out of his hip pocket. He was totin' formal. Black Gat with white holster.
Riding Costa, important clue. You call Louis in, Mr. Montecarlo. Flanto.
Okay. Hey, boys.
Yes, sir.
Page Louis the Twitch. Send him in here.
Okay.
Call for Louis the Twitch, Tom.
Very good. Case solved in no time. You can't brush me off, because I always got more dandruff. You can try, but you can't brush me off. Request number. Oh, long time. Woogie, woogie, cat.
Oh, this must be Louis.
Come in.
You sent for me, Cuff.
No, I sent for you, Miss Aloy the Witch. Long Pan arrest you for murder.
I didn't bump off, Sherman. Somebody stole me gun and beat me to it.
You mean you were going to shoot my partner because we opened another tropical nightclub next to yours?
I didn't mind you bums starting your typhoon next to my sarong.
Typhoon next to sarong for a draft day.
But why did you want to kill Sherman?
It was that no-drinker swankster, Zambi. That's a dead steal from the drink my club is featuring, the Zimbi.
Well, but your Zimbi is just a steal from the zombie.
I know, but it was my original idea to steal the zombie. He stole my steal, that stool.
Long Pan find out who steals stool later. First, mystery, who killed Sherman Swank?
Hey, you fellas, I'm going to miss my bus.
Quiet, please, quiet.
I only came here for a ginger ale.
You sit down. You keep quiet.
Hey, wait a minute, Long Sam. I seem to recognize this punk.
Yeah.
Wasn't you sitting next to me at my table, bud?
I can't answer, sir. My mother told me not to talk to strangers.
Certainly, you're the jerk. I busted out laughing when you ordered a ginger ale.
Ginger ale. Jigsaw complete. You steal gun from tough guy, Louie. You shoot Mr. Sherman Swank.
That Mr. One Long Pan is a dirty fib.
Oh, yeah? Maybe you can explain the bulge in back pocket.
That's my yo-yo, Smarty Pants.
Long Pan, investigate yo-yo. Come here.
Well, good night, all.
Hey, Louis.
Let me get over here.
You see, not yo-yo in pocket. Lee Wallowa.
Lee Wallowa?
Yeah, that's my gat, too. You see, there's me crest on the hand.
Also, two bullets missing. You fess up, Mr. High Boys.
Okay. You got me, Long Pan. I killed Sherman Swank.
Why, Daddy?
It was that darn drink, the Zambi.
Zambi?
Yes. I came in to get a ginger ale, and what did they bring me? A Zambi. It was the last straw.
But why?
You see, I love ginger ale. And with all those crazy drinks all over town, I can't get a ginger ale. Every time I order ginger ale, they bring me a zombie, a Zimbi, a Zumbi, a Zambi. I'll get ginger ale if I have to shoot every nightclub owner in town. I'll kill myself.
No, stop straining voice, Kenny Baker, or next week you'll sing bass.
I don't care. Tell me, Long Pan, will I hang for this killing?
No, Kenny. Can a singer get away with murder? Nobody ever hang you.
Why not?
Aesop say nobody ever want good tenor to swing. Long Pan, Johnny.
Jimmy has a word for us.
They call them dusters, the men who...